lecture number 40. We're talking about
a specific model problem, integral do. It is basically represented this way, integral e to the I, our typical phase factor, gradient phi, we have m squared phi squared dnx minus lambda phi to the fourth dnx. I'm going to put my, I'm going to do it a slightly different way. Put my one half m squared outside. I'm going to call that m zero. We don't know what that is. Lambda zero, we don't know what that is. There are things here which I don't know what they are, so I don't even bother writing them. Those are the counter terms, d phi. And there is a normalization. Call that S of h. The only thing we know is that S of zero should be unity. We know about the free theory, on the other hand. Call that n zero, e to the I h phi dnx minus one half m zero squared, or just call that one m. Phi squared dnx d phi, assume that is Gaussian, and that answer is e to the minus one half m squared in the denominator, integral h of x quantity squared dnx. We discussed our more complicated problem, the quartic interaction here, by means of perturbation theory. There we found it was non-renormalizable, needing an unending series of counter terms. We discussed it by means of a lattice approximation in which we let m0 and lambda0 depend on the lattice spacing, and we found that a free theory was the only possible answer. That was our central limit theorem idea. The next thing we talked about was using some hard analysis, and we determined that our answer had to look like e to the minus integral dnx, 1 minus cosine h of x u, times a measure, which I wrote as c squared of u du. A few properties on c squared we talked about. We have eliminated the free kind of term from this, and we're focusing on this particular form. And we found that we could realize this x, this, well, we can think of this as the average of some stochastic variable, h of x, in an appropriate distribution. And we could realize that stochastic variable by means of an infinite sum of variables basically distributed according to our C function up here, and delta functions of x minus yn, where these were Poisson distributed. Right, that's where we got the last time we were together. Now, we're going to put our heads together and try to find the definition of local products. After all, we are supposed to know what to do when we square the field and raise the field to a fourth power. These are local products. All these fields occur at the same space-time point. I'm going to make an assertion here that every field operator representation implies its own natural definition of local product. All that is to say is that if this is my representation of the field, this being its characteristic functional, then somehow hidden in that is the definition of the local product. Let's start a little bit easier. Let's start with examples we know about, Gaussian, or more particularly normal variables. Remember those? They had no mean. and we talked about those in the case of Brownian motion and Ornstein-Uhlenbeck. They had a similar representation, except I had a certain classes of functions over here. These were fixed functions, and these were independent, identically distributed random Gaussian random variables, normal random variables, with the fact that they had a unity for their variance, and they were independent, so they had the cross-correlations functions here, zero. These can come in two kinds. One, a ordinary stochastic variable, which has the following signature property, that the correlation function phi of x, phi of y is a smooth function. In particular, phi of x quantity squared is well defined at every point. That's what I mean by smooth. If that's the case, if so, then the natural definition of the square of this thing is nothing more than taking this product by itself. So this is also a sum n equals 1 to infinity. And squaring it. No danger comes from that. That's the natural definition of the local product. More interesting is the situation where we deal with a generalized stochastic variable. In that case, phi x, phi y is a distribution, and more particularly, phi of x quantity squared is generally infinite. We've talked about normal variables before, and we had a little argument that said if this was true, then that meant that the variable itself was infinite square almost everywhere. So it took on plus and minus infinity values. We had to smear it. We had to use a test function in order to have something reasonable. If that's the case, then phi squared of x will not be a satisfactory local product. It's not an operator. It's not a random variable in this sense. Okay. Well, let's look at that. Let's take 5x times 5y, which will be some xn xm unx umy. I'm going to add and subtract the mean of that. These are arranged to be delta, Kronecker deltas, so that quickly evaluates the mean for us. I mean, the term we've added and subtracted. So 5x, 5y in the generalized stochastic situation is sum mn equal 1 to infinity. Xn xm minus delta nm un of x um of y. I put the two terms together that I'm dealing with, plus the contribution, which is the additive term. That's a delta nm, so I'll just do that un of x un of y. That's purely C number. And here I've subtracted the same C number from here. Now it turns out, and this is the case we're in, that this term here is the most singular term in this expression. This is less singular here. And it is natural to take as the local product, as x goes to y, the coefficient of the most singular term. Except in this case, the coefficient of the most singular term is not a random variable. It's a number. So, good heavens, that's a bad choice to make. So for Gaussian normal variables, we do not choose the most coefficient of the most singular term as the local product. We, in fact, subtract that term from the other side. Well, let me do it this way. And what's left over, mn equal 1 to infinity, xn xm minus delta nm, un of x, um of y, this will become the ingredient for our local product. So here it is. Phi of x quantity squared minus average phi of x quantity squared, which I'll give a name to, double dot phi squared of x. There it is. It is equal to this double sum of xn xm delta nm un of x um now at the same point x. Okay, point being that when we deal with Gaussian or normal random variables, we deal with a subtractive renormalization of local products. Now let's look at our Poisson case. Our phi of x was about here on the board before. I'll do it again. Phi of x was summation xn, delta function, I don't write the n this time, x minus yn is still there, of course. Phi of x times phi of y, summation xn xm, delta of x minus yn, delta of y minus ym. This sum, I'm going to break into two parts. One, when the two terms are the same, n equals 1 to infinity, so n equals m. So I have an xn squared, and I have a delta of x minus yn, delta of y minus yn, plus a contribution in which the two terms are unequal, never equal. This term says delta of x equals something, delta of y equals the same thing. So I can replace this yn by the fact that it must equal y. That makes it delta of x minus y, which is independent of the sum. So that comes straight out in front. Delta of x minus y, summation, n equals 1 to infinity, xn squared, delta of x minus yn, plus the term summation m not equal to n. I don't have to write the details. This is the most singular term in the sum. It has an interesting coefficient. It's not unity, as was the case for the Gaussian random variables before. This has a stochastic coefficient. I want that as my local product. So I'm going to take phi of x squared. I'll put x equal to y. Now I'm going to write this formally, delta of 0. We'll talk about that in a minute, a little bit later. N equals 1 to infinity, xn squared, delta of x minus yn, plus smooth in that term, x is now equal. I want to divide by this delta. This is multiplicative renormalization as opposed to subtractive renormalization. But delta carries dimensions. Delta has the dimensions. Here is my symbol for dimensions.
length minus n, because I'm in n-dimensional space. If I multiply that by dx to the power n, I should integrate to 1. I don't want to lose dimensions. So I'm going to create a constant, b, which is positive, and has the dimensions also of the same kind. This has dimensions length to the minus n. I'm going to put a b here to take the dimensions, and I'm going to put a b inverse right next to it. So I haven't done anything. Now I'm going to divide by this quantity. Phi of x squared divided by b inverse delta of 0. That will be b summation n minus 1 to infinity xn squared delta of x minus yn. Now this division by an infinite quantity will kill what was smooth before. That won't be there anymore. And this combination I call my renormalized square. I have made out of my operator representation here a natural quantity, which is a square and is multiplicative as opposed to what we had before. Notice it has structurally the same form. It is still a sum with random coefficients of Dirac delta functions. That tells me that I can do that again. I can take phi of x times phi squared renormalized. That will be, well, let's do y first. That will be a summation of xn and xn squared and xm delta n minus, sorry, x minus yn delta y minus ym. I take the terms which are equal. M equals n. So that's xn cubed delta x minus yn delta y minus yn plus the terms which are different. Now I'm going to set them equal to each other. Phi of x cubed. That will be summation xn cubed delta of x minus yn. This was already a delta of x minus y, so that becomes a delta of 0 plus, again, smooth. Now, by the way, I did have a b here that I didn't want to lose. That b was part of the definition of this guy. I want to divide by delta 0 again. So this is phi of x, now phi squared of x renormalized. That's more precisely what it is. I want to divide by this delta of 0. But again, I need another b to take the dimensions from that away. So I put a b squared, divide by that thing, and I have phi cubed of x renormalized, which is phi of x cubed, divided now by this thing squared. Another way to write that is b on top, b squared over delta of 0 squared, phi of x cubed. And that is equal to b squared summation xn cubed delta x minus yn, the smooth part disappearing by the division. So I've been able to define a cube of a local power in very much the same way. And that goes on, obviously. Phi power p of x, renormalized, is equal to the naive phi of x raised to the power p. I will call that now z to the power p. Z is my normalization constant, which happens to be 0 numerically.
that equals the sum b to the p minus 1, sum from n equal 1 to infinity, xn to power p, delta of little x minus yn. So I have now a collection of powers. All coming from multiplicative renormalizations. Let's evaluate this time. Instead of e to the I h phi of x, I'm going to evaluate an integral where I have y of x and I have phi p r of x. dnx, here's a dnx, average. Here, I'm going to let p be even power, and I'm going to let y of x be a function which is not negative, and we'll say it has a compact support. That means that there's some region r, y lives here, and y equals 0 outside that region. We did before, we evaluated this quantity, and this was the answer. Now let's calculate the evaluation of this guy again. Well, that is 1, then there's e to the I h. Well, let me write down what this phi of x looks like. Phi of x is our original phi, summation xn, delta of x minus yn. And then the phi p is this one. They're both of the same type. So I have a u this is an h of y du times u minus a y, capital Y of little y, u to power p with a b to the p minus 1, d rho of u, dy n over volume, all raised to the nth power. That's how we evaluated that quantity before. So I add and subtract 1. 1 minus 1 over cap v integral, 1 minus e to the I h of y u minus y of little y u to power p b to p minus 1. D rho of u dny all to power n. Now I take the limit n to infinity, v to infinity. That quotient was k. dny, 1 minus e to the I h of y, u minus y of little y, u to p, v to p minus 1, d rho of u. Then you remember we took a sequence where the k's depended on things, the rho depended on things. This was a normalized measure. I want to leave that. I want to allow for those, so I take another limit here as the l's just go, and that gives me e to the minus integral dny 1 minus e to the I h of y u minus capital Y of little y u to power p, an even number, b to the p minus 1, c squared of u to u. If y is 0, I fall back to the formula I had. C squared is an even function, so only the cosine will appear. But if y is not 0, I can't make that simplification about the cosine.
John, second line at the bottom, what's immediately after the equal sign before the E?
L-I-M. Sorry. Limit as the L's go to infinity. Some sequence here. Okay.
I would now like to let y of y become a constant k over all space, throughout space, through out r to the n. Let me do that. Let me just replace this by a capital K. I'll do it. Don't you do it on your board. I'm going to turn to that. That's capital K. H here will disappear after a while. Let's imagine that has localized support too, so that's unity. But if this K is constant, this integrand will never be zero when I'm integrating c squared du, and that's giving me a finite answer, and I integrate that over all space, I get infinity. So I can't do that. I have to keep it like that. Why is that happening? It's happening because I haven't normalized the expression. I want to take y function to a constant, but I have to put in another normalization factor, a new normalization factor, so that when h goes to zero, I have this kind of normalization that I like over here, that s of zero is unity. I want to make a true characteristic function out of this. So what do I have to do? I have to divide this expression by what it equals when h equals zero. So I do that, dny, that becomes my normalization, 1 minus d to the minus y of little y, u to the power p, b to the p minus 1, c squared of u, okay, well, that's an exponent in the denominator. I can bring it upstairs, change the sign. Then I have a minus 1 here and a plus 1 here. The 1s will go away. So that will look like now e to the minus dny. e to the minus y of y u p b p minus 1 minus this term, which is e to the I h of y u minus the same thing. This quotient has led to this. Now I have a common factor of e to the minus y. I will bring that out of this expression. E to the 1 minus e to the I h y of u, and then I have this common thing outside. And now I am free to take the limit y goes to a constant. Because y going to a constant here does not interfere with the fact that this integrand will eventually go to zero quickly, and so I'll have a finite volume there. So we'll let y go to a constant. And we get e to the minus dny. In fact, I can use the cosine because of the evenness of my the rest of my integration here. So cosine of hyu e to the minus constant u to the power p b to the p minus 1 c squared of u du. So that is my ultimate answer for this quantity with the limit taken. What does that expression actually mean? I have actually added another interaction into my problem. I have taken my original problem here and put in a term which is k0 phi to the power p dnx. This is now added into my action. It's just like augmenting this term would be. In other words, I have seen how an additional term appears in my answer. There's a k here and a k0 there. Well, how could they differ? I want this k0 to be proportional to the k, but do the trick of taking the ordinary power of the field and converting it into the renormalized power. So I'd have to have a z to the power p here. This is the connection then between actually that's a p minus 1. You guys are not helping me. Okay, that's the ordinary, that's the connection then, that will take me from an ordinary pretend power of just multiplying them together to the rescaled power, which gives me the proper definition. Okay. Well, if that's the case, if this is the functional form the insertion of a new interaction takes, then I can understand immediately how this term appears. This term, I'll throw this away, or let p equal to 4 or something. I'll throw that term, throw that new one term away, and say that that's actually related to a lambda, and then that power 4 with a b cubed, and what's left behind it is as if I had removed the lambda altogether. So let me write down what this conclusion is. That this quantity now equals e to the minus dny 1 minus cosine h of y u e to the minus lambda b cubed u to the fourth c0 squared of u du, where lambda 0 and lambda are related by the factor z cubed or b cubed over delta to the 0 cubed. That's the finite parameter. This thing has got to be extremely small, which accounts for the implicit multiplicative renormalization. This equation holds for all lambda. It holds as lambda gets arbitrarily small. Now, at this point, I want you to remember that you have sworn to be open-minded. Is anybody objecting to that today?
No.
Thank you. So let's take that limit, lambda to 0, and take it seriously. It would say that the expression e to the I h phi dnx minus 1 half m0 squared phi squared dnx d phi is equal to e to the minus dny 1 minus cosine h of yu times c0 squared of u du. Question?
If we do what we did with perturbation theory, where we expanded up to the first order and then tried to see, tried to put in the counter terms and cancel them. So in this theory, in this toy theory, if you will your renormalized fields give the same result as you got in the perturbation theory you did by expanding it to the first order?
Let me go all the way to the answer and have you raise the question again, okay? Because there will be a perturbation series to look at the end. I'm not quite ready for your question. Okay, this looks Gaussian, but you've made a lot of assumptions in that. You've assumed that there are no counter terms here. I'm telling you the answer is to look like that. How can I find the C0 squared? Yeah. Let's put in another term, which is a square. We know how that term enters. Sorry for my note taker for doing this to you. That enters as a minus kappa times a b and a u squared. But these two terms are the same. So they belong with the same coefficient. So that's a 1 half m0 squared times a 1 plus 2 kappa 0 over an m0 squared times a phi squared dx I h phi dnx d integral d phi. Now, I will rescale the field. Phi at every point is being rescaled. Remember, we have this particle theory of integration. We emit something. So we're going to let our phi sit there and emit 1 over 2 kappa 0 over m0 squared square root. If I do that, I will pick up the square of this in the denominator. That will exactly cancel that term and make it look like that. Okay, so then I have eta prime, some constant, which is absorbing that. E to the I h phi divided by square root 1 plus 2 kappa 0 over m0 squared dnx minus 1 half m0 squared phi squared d phi. Agreed? Please stop me if you're troubled. Okay, kappa 0 and m0 squared are the same kind of objects. So kappa 0 over m0 squared will also be equal to kappa over m0, namely dropping the zeros. This will be the finite parameter. This will be the other parameter. We talked about the square. So m0 squared has got to be a finite parameter times a single z, a b, with times divided by a delta function. So does kappa 0 has to be a z times the kappa, which is a b over delta o times a regular kappa. So the quotient is the same. So, but this is of the original form. The only thing that's different is, now watch, watch me carefully, I'm going to move this square root from under the phi to under the h. So it's a different h. It's the original problem with a different h. That means we have dny integral 1 minus cosine h of yu, now the h carries that there, 1 plus 2 kappa over m squared times c0 squared of u du. So this equation equals this equation. Let me get rid of the term here. Now by changing variables, u will now squirt out this offending factor. And we will come to the following expression. E to the minus dny, 1 minus cosine h of yu. This u squirting that out will give me a square root of 1 plus 2 kappa over m squared. And then I have e to the, then I have c0 squared of argument, square root 1 plus 2 kappa over m squared u du. And that expression has to equal our original one, which was e to the minus dny, 1 minus cosine h of y u times c, no, e to the minus kappa b u squared c0 squared of u du. This has to be true for all h. All h. The only way that can be true is if the coefficients are equal. So I need e to the minus kappa b u squared c0 squared of u should equal where 1 plus 2 kappa m squared, c0 squared, 1 plus square root 1 plus 2 kappa m squared. The only place I can't say that is where this coefficient vanishes. That means that u equals 0, so I will say this equation holds everywhere except at the point u equals 0. It holds for all u and all kappa reasonable values. So I'm going to let u equal 1 now. So we have e to the minus kappa b, c squared u if argument 1, 1 plus 2 kappa m squared, c0 squared of square root 1 plus 2 kappa m squared. Now, since u is no longer part of the problem, I will reintroduce it. 1 plus 2 kappa m squared square root, I will now define as u. It didn't have to be u, I only do it to annoy you. E to the minus kappa b, c0 squared of 1, equals u, c0 squared of u. Well, this kappa, however, depends on u, and I have to solve for that. So I square that, I get a 2 kappa m squared is equal to u squared minus 1. So I solve for kappa there, e to the minus b, that's m squared over 2 times u squared minus 1. So I replace the kappa by this. Divide by u, we have c squared of u. There's a u down here. There's a c0 squared of 1 over here. Then I have an e to the minus b m squared over 2u squared. And I have an e to the plus b m squared over 2. This is arranged so that when u equals 1, we'll cancel that, and I have an identity. So I have found c squared of u. E to the minus b m squared over 2 u squared. C0 squared is an even function. I've only been doing it for the positive value, so I now make that absolute. That takes care of that. There's some constant, which I haven't been able to determine. That's a constant. So I have determined the form of C0 squared up to a constant. So let's go back to our original problem. This is our original problem. 1 half m0 squared phi squared dnx minus lambda 0. We have e to the minus b m squared over 2 u squared minus lambda b cubed u to the fourth du over absolute u. That takes care of the c0 c squared part. All we have left is the alpha. Let's figure out what the dimensions of alpha are. Whatever the dimensions of u are, this is dimensionless. This quotient, du over u, is dimensionless. The only place I get dimensions is from this term. That is length to the n. I already have something, which is length to the n minus 1. I can put a b there that has now killed the dimensional part of that. And the only thing I don't know is the numerical factor in front. I'm going to make a convention. I'm going to put a half. I used to put a 1, then I switched to a half. Doesn't really matter. All that does is determine the scaling of the two-point function. Those of you who have had some quantum field theory know that I am just adjusting the scale factor in front of the two-point function. So we have evaluated our integral, this integral, with literally without doing an integral. Okay. Now, let's talk about lambda to 0. Lambda to 0 has this feature that it does not go back to the free theory, it does not go back to a Gaussian theory, it goes back to a pseudo-free theory. In fact, all of these theories up here, whatever the lambdas are here. And if I chose a different power than 4, I could put a 6 or an 8 or a 28 or a 108. they would all fit in this category up here. All you would do would be change that number and that number. Okay. So this is hardcore interaction displayed for you. Well, what about the path integral? Where is the path integral? I would like to find some expression that makes it clear to me that this is my answer. So I would like to write a lattice expression, e to the I summation hk phi k delta. Remember delta? That was our a to the n, since we're dealing only with the lattice series like that. We have 1/2 m0 squared. But I'll write that as m squared and then put a b times delta. Delta here is the finite approximation to 1 over delta to the 0, the Dirac singularity. So this is the lattice form of this one. Now that I know what the right normalization dependence of this term is, then I have a finite lambda, a b delta cubed, summation phi k to the 4th delta. And then I say to you, by trial and error, this is the correction term. 1 minus b delta.
Your deltas.
Or is it 2b delta? What's your question? Hello?
We've got one delta equal to a to the n, and then the other...
They're all equal to a to the n.
Okay.
Times natural log of phi. Product d phi k. What about h bar? You say, well, where, how did this term come about? Well, there was an h bar here. There was an h bar here. There was an h bar here. And this is an h bar, if you like, but there's an h bar on top. This is an h order h bar correction to the original problem. You could not have guessed that from our classical theory, whatever that was. Now I have to prove to you in the next 2 minutes that this actually works. Okay. E to the I is a product integral. They're all the same integrals. Hk phi k delta minus, even the phi's are the same, 1/2 m squared b delta phi squared delta minus lambda b delta cubed phi to the 4th delta d phi over phi to the 1 minus b delta. This is a product over the k's. Change variables. That phi delta, there's some normalization, of course. Phi delta equal to u, 1 hku minus 1/2 b u squared times m squared minus lambda b cubed u to the power 4 du over u to the 1 minus b delta. Add and subtract, 1 minus, some normalization, 1 minus e to the I hk u, e to the minus 1/2 b u squared m squared minus lambda b cubed u to the 4th du over u to the 1 minus b delta. Product over k. I have to find out what this n is. I have to estimate n. N is the normalization. So n is this integral right here. But I'm going to cheat on that. I'm going to say the weight of that integral comes primarily from this singularity. And I'm just going to chop it off arbitrarily between plus and minus b. That's the statement that the infinity is not important. I chop it off this way. You can evaluate that integral. It's it's really this way. 1 should equal n times that. So that's n. This integral is 2, to take it from 0 to b, divided by b delta. and then there's a capital B raised to the B delta power. That's that integral, trust me. So whatever capital B is, as long as delta goes to zero, that's something to the power zero. That's going to be one. The dominant term here is that N should be B delta divided by cap 2. That's the dominant thing. So, to save time, I put it in, B delta over 2. This term is now of order delta. I had a 1 minus B delta here. To keep this delta any longer is superfluous because that's higher order in delta, so I can erase this one. The singularity at U equals 0 is gone. And now I take the limit as k goes to infinity. I beg your pardon, limit as delta goes to zero, and I get indeed b over 2 integral dny integral, only the even part matters, cosine hyu e to the minus b over 2 m squared u squared minus lambda b cubed u to the power 4 du over u. I challenge you to have guessed this term or something enough like it to have given this as an answer, but I claim that that is the proper evaluation of that integral. And that concludes our lecture, and I want to thank all my good students of all ages. Thank you.